And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Prophecy is an amazing thing, isn't it? It is so powerful. There's so many aspects of it. You won't even understand prophecy by going to one book or another. You can't just go to the book of Daniel, a great prophetic book, by the way, and say, now I understand prophecy. You can't go to the book of Revelation. In fact, you must go from Genesis all the way to Revelation to fully understand what God has prepared for this world. Now, I'm going to tell you today, and we really only have 1 hour together. I'm not going to be able to get to even a fraction of what you really need to know. But I'm going to tell you today what the Jews think about the last days, what the Jews believe to be the future of Judaism and of Zionism and of Christianity. You know, I was talking to a gentleman just a couple of weeks ago, and he came over to see me in my house, and we sat chatting about various things, and we got on religion, of course. And then we began to discuss the last days, one of my favorite subjects, the end times. Now, this man is really not a strong Christian, and he doesn't understand the distinctions of a Christian and, well, even a heathen, really. But he said to me, well, if the Jews win, if they conquer the world, if they destroy Christianity and have their own utopia, now remember that word, utopia. We'll discuss that quite at length here. If we reach a situation where the Jews attain their Jewish utopia, that would not be so bad, would it? Aren't the Jews very, very close to Christians? I mean, they have the Old Testament, you have the New Testament. But Jesus came from the Jews. And really, there's only a small little variation. There's only, you know, I mean, it's not so much that you can even see it. I've talked with many Christians, the man told me, who say that many Jews are very pious, very religious. And when I've talked to the Jews, what few Jews I've talked to, he said, they say they want a future world in which there's prosperity and peace and harmony. What can you find wrong with that? The gentleman asked me. Well, you know, I just didn't have time to talk to him. I mean, if I were to take him, and it's so complex, it's so, I mean, fraught with danger and you know, misunderstandings on every side that I almost lost my speech. And then finally I said to him, the difference is between heaven and hell. That was it. That's the difference. The difference in the Jewish utopia and what the Bible says will be the Christian victory is the difference between heaven and hell. And I told the man, how much difference is there? How much of a barrier is there? How many miles between heaven and hell? Or can we even frame it in terms of a distance? Is there any way to bridge the gap between heaven and hell? I wish I'd had more time, but today I want to take some time with you. Because many people may ask you that question. And you may someday, you look around and you watch a television program. I've seen them, a Jew and a Jewish rabbi and a Christian pastor, usually an Episcopalian or somebody like that, are going around on TV and showing everybody how much in harmony and ecumenicalism they're in. And, oh, you know, we'll answer your questions as a Jew or a Christian. It doesn't matter to us. Have you seen that team, that duo? I have. But no one knows the questions to ask them. I've often wished I was the questioner. I wish I was I would almost turn it into an interrogation, I suppose. But I realize that neither that Christian pastor nor the rabbi knew very much about their own religious system. Or if the rabbi knew, he was just pretending and faking. Maybe he did know. You know, there's a poem, actually, it is a poem, sort of say a story, very famous, by a woman named Mary Howitt, published way back in 1829. And it's you'll probably remember it. It's called The Spider and the Fly. The Spider and the Fly. Now, the first line of the poem goes like this. The spider is talking to the fly here, and the spider says, "Will you walk into my parlor?" Now, you may have heard it a different way. "Come into my parlor." That's also a popular rendition. "Come into my parlor." He's inviting the fly in to his parlor. Now, this is a very curiously fascinating story that tells about a spider, a cunning spider, by the way, who seeks to ensnare a naive fly. How does he do it? Through the use of seduction and flattery. You know, the Bible says the Antichrist will win his kingdom through flattery. Oh, the world thinks he's going to batter. He's going to beat. He's going to bludgeon. He's going to take his armed forces and go across this globe, killing and marauding. No. He wins his kingdom through flattery. He only has a small people, a small number. But he is so persuasive. He's so cunning. He appears to be a good character, and he has solutions. And why, you want to believe him? He's like the spider. "Come into my parlor." Now, here's an evil entity who uses charm and smooth talk to disguise his, well, let's face it, folks, rather grotesque intention. Let me give you the first two stanzas, first couple of lines, first several lines of The Spider and the Fly. It goes this way. "Will you walk into my parlor?" said the spider to the fly. "'Tis the prettiest little parlor that you ever did spy. The way into my parlor is up a winding stair, and I've a many curious things to show you when you are there." Oh, yes. "Oh, no, no," said the little fly. "To ask me is in vain, for who goes up your winding stair can never come down again." Oh, that little fly, he wasn't so dumb after all, was he? He knew. It's a very beautiful parlor. "And it's the prettiest little parlor that you ever did spy," said the spider. and he said, I've many curious things to show you when you are there." "Oh, no, no," said the little fly. "To ask me is in vain, for who goes up your winding stair can ne'er come down again." Now this clever but dangerous spider reminds me of the seductive God talk of the Jews. Oh, they really believe in God. Oh, they can't even pronounce his full name. He is so holy to them. He says, walk into my parlor. He warmly invites the unsuspecting Christian. You will find, he says, that we Jews are God's chosen people. Well, right away, you're disarmed. If they're God's chosen people, how can you possibly say no? They just want to invite you into their parlor. Why are you so cruel and mean and unhospitable? And so the Jew goes on, he says, we promise you what we in Jewish land called tikkun olam. That's a Hebrew term. You say, well, what does that mean? He says, well, that means a remaking or remending of the world. We will mend the world. We will remake the world. Tikkun olam. We mean to make it wonderful, lovely, prosperous. It will be a golden age, says the Jew, of peace and prosperity. Come, enter my parlor, up a winding stair. I have a many curious things to show you when you are there. Now, I want to assure you, my friends, that in the Jew's parlor, in that spider web of evil, of intrigue and treachery, you will find more than you ever bargained for. You will not find the streets of gold that are mentioned in the New Testament. You will not find Jesus Christ welcoming you with open arms, for they say he's in hell, burning in unholy, fiery excrement. Listen to me very carefully, my friends. Their tikkun olam, their heaven is earth. Earth. Of course, it's going to be mended, revised. As Gorbachev, the Soviet Union's communist chieftain, said, we believe in perestroika. Now, what did perestroika mean? That was a Russian word, and it meant exactly what tikkun olam means. We mean to mend. We mean to revise, to remake the world. Barack Obama wants to revise and mend the world. And he would like to take it and mold it and reinvent it. And there are many curious things that you will find in that future world of Barack Obama if he were to remain in the presidency for too long. This will be a golden age for the Jews. And, of course, you Gentiles will have your place there too. Now, I'm going to tell you today what your place will be. And don't have any mistake about this. Know your enemy, my friends. These people are the enemy because they belong to Satan. Now, I'm not going to tell you that the Muslims are wonderful people and the Buddhists and the Hindus and all the others. They're all satanic. And the Freemasons as well. I've often said I look at the Jews and the Muslims as like two scorpions in a bottle. And they fiercely fight and sting each other. Don't go down the opening in that bottle and fall down into the container and get involved in that fight, which we're doing. Of course, America is now lost thousands of our young men and women in the boiling cauldron of the Middle East. We have got into that fight between the two scorpions of Islam and Judaism. We should stay out as Christians. Christians have no business in a war for Israel or against Israel. We let our Lord Jesus do the fighting for us. Not too long ago, a man sent me a book. He said, Tex, this is a very rare book. It was found, he said, on the shelves at the University of Texas, at the library there. Nobody even knew it existed. But I wanted you to have this very rare copy. I looked at the book. It was entitled The Jewish Utopia. It was by a rabbi named Michael Higger. It was dated 1932, and I opened up the cover, and it had, oh, the most wonderful things to say. It says, this book has the imprimatur, meaning the official approval, the formal approval of the Rabbinical Council of the State of Texas. And I also was made to understand from the introduction of the book that it simply told what the Jews themselves believed, what their Talmud said would be true about the coming world. That's what they call it, the coming world. It will be, said the book, a utopia, a radiant place in which the righteous, which is Israel and the Jews, will sit atop the heap of nations and peoples. And they will have a king over them. Now the protocols of the learned elders of Zion refer to him as the king despot. They also say that he is the sovereign lord of all the world. We would know him as the beast 666 Antichrist. But the Jews say, no, 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 no. That's not so. This is the Holy One. This is the one that we must speak in very hallowed terms about. Oh, lower your voice when you refer to our great king. He will usher in a golden age for the Jews, a messianic millennium of peace and prosperity, and all the world's wealth will be in the hands of the Jews. Oh, yes. Isn't it now, my friends? Haven't the banks of this world, the Goldman Sachs, the Bank of America, Barclays of England, HSBC from Red China, haven't all these banks heaped great fortunes upon the Jews of the world? They right now are so wealthy and rich. I mean, Forbes magazine named the America's 100 most wealthy, and 51 of them were Jews, but they only make up 2% of the American population. Now, this book says that the Jews are going to be able to utilize the fact that they are, listen to this, a divine race. Oh, they're divine. That means they're gods. They're gods. Only these gods will have the power and, of course, the wealth to remend this world, to revise this world, to make it into a better place. And they will ensure the world is a better place because they're going to mete out justice. Recently in the rebuilt nation of Israel, the Rothschilds built a great Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court of Israel, but it will someday, they say, be the Supreme Court of the entire world. Oh, it's a different structure. I believe I talk about it a little bit and show it in my interesting book, Mysterious Monuments. Very obvious occultism. All the way back to Egypt is inside that incredible structure. All conflicts will be settled not by the United Nations, not by the International Criminal Court, not by some tribunal of the Asian Pacific nations or North American, Union or the European Union. No, the justice will be meted out for the whole world by the Supreme Court of the Jews. They will be the final arbiter of what's right and wrong, and the world will be reconstructed, mended, and revised. That's Tikkun Olam. According to the pattern outlined in the Babylonian Talmud. That's their most holy book. And it says that Judaism shall be the supreme religion of the divine race, which is the Jews. Now, how do they get all this money? Well, one thing is you're going to give it to them. Now, I'm just a middle-class person. I don't have a lot of money to give. Maybe you don't either. Maybe you're working class. Maybe you're, you know, really poor. Or maybe you are rich. But it doesn't really matter. Every Gentile will give all the money they've got to the Jews. And you will become a slave. What is that? Oh, yes. You know, you may not understand this, but I've gone back and I've studied the slavery in the United States during the Civil War period. Guess who brought the slaves to America? The Jews did. Did you know that of 127 ships, over 100 belong to Jewish rich men, slavers, Jewish slavers? They conducted the auctions. They brought in the slave ships. They paid off the Africans or did what they had to do to bring in these black slaves into the United States. They owned the plantations, the most of them, because they believe in slavery. Their most holy book says they're going to have slaves. It's going to be you. And if you're not physically fit, you'll die. If you're not mentally fit, you'll die. Because every slave is only worth what he's, if he's able to work. But for the Jews, think about it. While you're slaving, as did the slaves in the cotton fields of the pre-Civil War South, while you're a slave, the Jewish utopia will be a blissful era of utter contentment, prosperity, and joy. This earth will be so wonderful and loved, and they don't need a heaven. The Jews do not need a heaven. They're going to be a divine race right here on this planet. Now, many Christian leaders have bought into this. I was listening to Jack Van Impe on Trinity Broadcasting Network. I don't very often listen to the man, but I was flipping channels, and he was talking about what heaven's going to be like. Sort of interesting subject. You know, I'm going to be there one day, and so I'd like to find out what's it going to be like. Where's my future home? Then I heard him say something amazing. He said, most Christians believe they're going to go to heaven. But that's not true. Earth is going to be turned into heaven. This planet, Earth, will become heaven. Oh my. That's right, he says, Earth will be heaven. Oh my. You see, he's a dispensationalist. Dr. Jack Van Impe is a Zionist. He believes in all this Jewish garbage. And they teach that this planet will be turned into heaven. It will be mended, revised, worked. And their king will be the supreme Lord. And their court will rule over everyone. And everyone's wealth will go to the Jews. And we, all the Gentiles, will become slaves. It's what Rabbi Hicker says in his book, The Jewish Utopia. The rabbinical council approved it. Now, you're not going to become a slave unless you qualify. You see, that's the highest you're going to get is slavery. Now, back in the old days, they would often give the slaves their freedom. I remember that Thomas Jefferson gave many of his slaves their freedom, and, you know, so did George Washington, and I remember Robert E. Lee. General Robert E. Lee, actually, before the Civil War, he wanted known that he did not lead the Southern troops for slavery. He freed all of his slaves before the war began. But be that as it may, I'm not trying to defend the South or blast the North. I'm talking about the future. If the Jews were to win and conquer the world, then they will have all of the Gentiles. Now, let me tell you how this works. You see, Rabbi Higger, in his book, The Jewish Utopia, 1932, says this. He says, by careful study of the rabbinic sayings that picture the ideal world, one gets a clear idea as to what constitutes a Jewish utopia. Imagine a hand passing from land to land, from country to country, marking either righteous or wicked on the forehead of the billions of inhabitants of our earthly globe. Now, think just a moment of that. A magic hand, a supernatural hand, spans the globe, and it momentarily stops over the forehead of each and every person, and their forehead is marked. You get a mark. Your mark is either righteous or wicked. Is that the mark of the beast? Maybe. Rabbi Higger says, to the righteous would belong all that God's wonderful world is offering, but to the wicked would belong nothing. Now, that's the first cut, isn't it? That's the first cut. If you're wicked, you belong nothing. You don't even own the water that you drink, the air that you breathe. You're going to be killed instantly. You're not worthy. You're not worth saving. Now, the righteous Gentiles, they could be worth saving. Let's just find out. Maybe you pass that test. Maybe you're a righteous Gentile. But how do you get to be righteous? Well, first of all, you got to get rid of Jesus. That's what the Jews say in their Talmud, in their Kabbalah. To believe in Jesus, that's idolatry. And according to the Talmud, idolatry is punishable by death. Oh. Oh, well, if I worship Jesus, I'm righteous, you say. Not according to the Talmud. That just qualifies you as one of the wicked. You got to turn away from that idol worship in which you worship Jesus Christ. You've got to forget about that idolatrous practice of Christianity. And that may earn you the right to be called righteous. If not, your fate is sealed. You're one of the wicked. You'll be put to death. And the Jews have a particular method, beheading. Your head will be cut off. Now, isn't it interesting? This is in their Talmud. This is in their Kabbalah. This is what the book, The Jewish Utopia, teaches. This is what I read on so many websites where I read what the rabbis are saying about their future world. And Rabbi Higger is not alone. Thousands of rabbis teach this. And they all talk about being beheaded. Did you know that they had a demonstration in Tel Aviv just a few years ago in which the participants in this giant demonstration march built several guillotines and they marched down the streets of Tel Aviv practicing with their guillotines? What was that all about? I'm telling you the truth. Maybe they were practicing for the great coming of the future utopia, of the coming world in which the Jews will reign supreme and which the Gentiles of the world will be given the choice, either give up Jesus or die. Isn't it amazing that Revelation 13 says that many will be beheaded? Many who worship Jesus will lose their head. That's what it says, Revelation 13. Now, when we come back in a minute, we're going to continue with our look at Tikkun Olam. What will happen when the Jews ascend the throne of absolute global dominion? I'm Tex Mars. Stay with us. I'll be right back. Hello again, folks. Tex Mars here. My book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, is very important. I believe it's the first book to explain the Jewish religion, to tell you about the Six-Pointed Star. and about the meaning of so many things. And it also unravels many mysteries of Judaism and of Zionism. I want you to have this book. It's, what, $30, I believe? And that's the book price, but we offer it for $25 here. It's about two or three times as big as a regular book. It's a lot of book there. And I think you'll have a lot of enjoyment in reading it. Now, I know it may make you mad, and you may get angry, and you may say, Lord, boy, I'm just furious. You know, calm my nerves a little bit. But isn't it good to know the truth? I praise Jesus that he has given us the tools to bring you the truth. So, Conspiracy of the Six Point of Star for $25, and we'll send you the book. If you're not getting our newsletter, Power of Prophecy, we'll send you that as well. Of course, you can read it free online. We have the feature article every month right there, and we give you all the books that we offer and so forth. Well, I said we give you, I mean we give you information about them. By the way, many people think that we just must make a fortune from selling our books and videos here. And I have to laugh sometime. In fact, let me tell you the truth, we lose money on our books, videos, and CDs, and DVDs as well. We lose money on all of it, and we're only able to stay in business because of the goodness of our friends out there. You give to this ministry, you give your donations, your offerings, your tithes to Power of Prophecy, and we're able to stay in business and keep going. The books really are a service. And the videos and such, I want you to have them because they'll explain things to you. And they'll help you to understand. So that's why we offer these things. We don't do it to make money. Sometimes people misinterpret that and say, oh, you're making money off that book. You must make millions. Well, I promise you, we do not make millions. In fact, we barely pay our bills here, and we continue on. Now, are we complaining about that? Not at all. No, sir. We're not complaining. I mean, we live in a house, we drive a car, we get to work, and, you know, sometimes we have money a little bit left over. We don't have to stop at a hamburger place or something. We might, you know, I don't know, stop somewhere else. Where do you go to eat, Jerry? I know Juan and I tell you, we eat at outdoor restaurants, you know, dining. you know, extravaganzas. I mean, like Wendy's and Whataburger and Burger King and all those. That's in fact, you know, Juan and I laugh about that, you know, outdoor dining, but not very glamorous. But, you know, it gets the job done, fills us up, I suppose. But, you know, I don't go for those fancy places. You know, I've been here in Austin, 39 years, I believe, lived in Austin, Texas. I've never been to the Top of the Mark. I understand there's a restaurant up in the big building in downtown. In fact, I've only eaten downtown three or four times. They used to have a spaghetti warehouse there. Remember, they closed that. I like Spaghetti Warehouse, yeah. And I used to eat there, you know, probably three or four times we'd go there and eat. And, of course, cafeterias. We eat cafeterias a lot. I don't, some people say cafeterias are sort of, you know, they're low class. I've never, you know, I like cafeterias. Go down the aisle and get whatever you want, you know. I don't know. I guess I'm just not a fancy guy, you know. I just, you know, I'll tell you, Jerry, life is too short to be rich. Now, I know that sounds funny. Life is too short to be rich. Listen to me, folks. The more you've got, the more you're going to have to spend to keep it up. That's right. And I wear the same T-shirts and the same pair of Dockers, and I have this watch. I think it. You know, I tell you, this watch is very expensive. It's a Citizen. I think it cost about $160 or so. you know. But I don't know. You know, I just laugh at people. I read recently that this prosperity preacher, Creflo Dollar, some black man, he spent $75 million for a jet. Said God told him, buy that jet. Well, God hasn't told me to go buy a jet. But maybe a bicycle. Maybe God will tell me to go buy a bicycle. I'm not sure. You know, but I don't care. I'm happy. I'm thrilled. I really am. And in fact, one that we downsized. You know, we had a bigger house, and we had all our grandkids come to visit us and all that. And we said, you know, now that our grandkids are gone and we're sort of empty nesters, we don't need that big house. So we sort of downsized. And we're happy. Now, you know, you just, you know, turn around there. You're there seeing everything. And even, I think, my two dogs, they like it because the yard's smaller. It's like a postage stamp in the back, you know. So, that's the way we're at. Now, folks, when you give to this ministry, it's going to go for the ministry. It really is. I don't know. I've spent too much time talking about money as it is. But that's the truth. It does. It goes for the ministry. And we're going to keep on going. And you know what? We haven't run out of money. We just keep on going. People keep giving. And they know we're telling the truth. We got audited by the IRS. When was it, about 13, 15 years ago? Yeah. The guy said, who pays for your car? The IRS agent. I said, well, I do. Does the ministry pay for your car? No. No, huh? What trips have you gone on this year? Well, that year, I had been ill a little bit. And I'd only gone one trip to North Carolina to speak at a church. So I said, well, I went to North Carolina one time. He said, do you ever go to Las Vegas? I said, no. I don't go to Las Vegas, sir. No, I don't. And, you know, he thought, I guess this guy thought, the auditor, he thought that's the way all Christians live. If I'm a Christian minister, I must go to Las Vegas, and the ministry buys me cars and all those kinds of things. Baloney. No, we don't have any of those things. He was very disappointed. You know, he was very disappointed. He couldn't find anything like that. Anyway, they ended up the audit, and they didn't find anything, you know, wrong, except they didn't like what I taught. You know, they didn't like my exposing things. I do want to encourage you to get Conspiracy of the Six-Point Story. If you don't have that book, you got to have that book. You just got to. It's $25. Add $5 shipping and handling, a total of $30. And just call us toll-free and order it today, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Now, you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, or textmars.com. Or you can write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Hey, by the way, did you know I'm 71 years old today, Jerry? 71. I tell you, when I was born, a midwife delivered me. I was way back in the country, you know, and a midwife delivered me. And I think they messed up on the birth certificate. Anyway, my mother always told me my birthday was July the 15th. So that's what I put down on all my documents. Now, in the Air Force, everybody accepted that. But later on, I got a birth certificate, I think about 10 years ago, and I was born July the 16th. Now I have two birthdays. I want to tell you, folks, I got two birthdays. That's right. You're going to get me a gift. You got to get it 2 days in a row. I'm double good here. Wanda doesn't like that. She says, you got to choose one day or the other. I said, I'm not going to do it. I like having two birthdays. So yesterday, we got, you know, I got our barbecue grill going, and we had a steak. We had actually a ribeye steak, for my birthday. So I asked one of them, we woke up this morning, what are we going to do today? She said, you had your birthday yesterday. Okay, well, enough of that. Enough of that. I have two birthdays every year. And the midwife, I don't know what, you know, what she was doing. By the way, they misspelled my name. T-E-X-E. Have you ever heard of a Texie? Well, they misspelled my name even. My mother said, we debated back and forth how to spell your name. So I just see, here I was already born and they were fighting back and forth. How are we going to spell his name? What birthday are we going to give this little tyke? Oh, my. Okay, now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about the Jewish utopia. The subject, will you walk into my parlor? Tikkun Olam. When the Jews ascend the throne of absolute global domination. That's their goal, you know. You see, they don't want a little nation in Israel. That's why they've taken over the American political system. That's why they control our culture. The TV shows you watch, the newspapers that you read, the online sources, everything is controlled by Jews. And Christians, well, we just don't cut it anymore. We're going to have to be dealt with. We're wicked. And that hand that extends itself across the globe, when it gets to our forehead, is going to say wicked, and you're going to be destroyed. Only after we're dealt with can global peace come. Now, that's the problem. You see, all these New Agers and peaceniks out there that are saying, we need world peace and love. Well, they've got to get rid of the troublemakers. Who are the troublemakers? The Christians. We won't go along with the world. We're holdouts. You're different, dear friend. You're a new creature. You're born again in spirit and in truth, and that makes you an idolater. You worship that Jesus. And the Jews say, oh, no, that we can't have that. Now, you may not believe this. You may say, oh, Tex, they're not going to kill me. They're not going to do that. Well, maybe you should read more. Maybe you should read, for example, what the late Sephardic rabbi, Obadiah Yosef, he was the chief rabbi in Israel. What he had to say about this subject. He gave a series of radio sermons in Israel in 2010. That was just a few years ago. Now, who is Rabbi Obadiah Yosef? He was spiritual leader of the Shas political party, a faction which, well, they helped Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's rise to power. And he was Netanyahu's good friend. When this man died, the nation of Israel mourned. I have the newspaper clippings. They say that 700,000 people crowded the streets as his funeral, I don't know if you call it a hearse or whatever, but it came down the street. And they all came out and they all mourned and cried and, oh, what a big commotion they caused because Rabbi Obadiah Yosef had died. They only have 7 million Jews living there, but 700,000 came out. What did he say in 2010 about the future of the Gentiles when the Jews ascend to power? He said, in the coming world, Gentiles may be likened to, quote, donkeys and beasts of burden. Oh, well, that's not a nice thing to say, is it? I've never said that about any peoples. I've never said the Jews are donkeys and beasts of burden. I've never said the Muslims are. I've always welcomed them into the fold of Christianity through belief in Jesus Christ. And if they believe, they will be saved, and they will be with me in heaven. But they say that Gentiles will never be received in the future except as slaves, as donkeys, as beasts of burden. If you're not killed because you worship Jesus, if you'll renounce him or if you don't believe in him at all, then you can be a donkey or a beast of burden. That's what Rabbi Yosef said. The main reason for the very existence of Gentiles, the rabbi explained, is that they are, that is, you and I are to serve as slaves for the Jews. That's your quote-unquote sole purpose. Now you say, well, I never heard of such a thing. Well, it was in the New York Times, mentioned it. It was in the Jerusalem Post newspaper. And Rabbi Yosef said, without this purpose, to be donkeys and beasts of burden, without this purpose, the non-Jew, the goy, that means you're like cattle, has no place in the world. That's why you were created. The Jews need some slaves. They need people to do manual labor. And you're the one picked, if you qualify. Now, the good news for the Gentiles, according to Yosef, is that you have value as a slave. Remember the slave master analogy back during the Civil War period? The slaves have value. You don't harm a slave. You don't kill another man's slave. You take care of them. You feed them. You give them shacks to live in. They're going to live good, long lives as slaves. So your usefulness as a Gentile will be amplified. In fact, Rabbi Yosef compared the life and value of a Gentile to that of a donkey. Each has monetary value. That's what the Jews think about. That's all they think about. You've got monetary value. That's what a slave back in the Civil War, a black slave, had monetary value. Because you do useful labor for your Jewish master. Now, you would think that the whole nation of Israel would come up against that. How dare Rabbi Yosef to say such a thing? Can you imagine if a Christian pastor said that? What if Pastor Osteen, Joel Osteen from Houston, or Pastor Rick Warren from California, what if they gave a talk and said, in the coming utopia, in the coming world, Jews will be killed, but if they're qualified, they'll be made slaves. They'll give all their wealth, all their money to us, and then they'll be slaves. They'll be donkeys, beasts of burden. That's all they're good for. Why, he'd be skewered. You'd never hear the end of that, folks. People would be talking about what horrible people they are to say such a thing. Imagine. But this rabbi, this Jewish rabbi, the chief rabbi in Israel, he said it. And he got wide acclaim among the Jews. They all agreed with him. Not every Jew agreed, of course, but most did. So much that a few years later, when he died, 700,000 came out and mourned for him. Now, Rabbi Yosef said, these teachings are not strange. They're in our Talmud. And the Talmud is the wisdom of the rabbis. The wisdom of the rabbis. Wow. Whosoever disobeys the rabbis deserves death. That's in the Talmud. That's the book of Irbin, 21b, page 21b. Whosoever disobeys the rabbis deserves death. Of course, I've already told you that you deserve death if you worship that blasphemer and destroyer of Israel. You know who that is, don't you? The blasphemer, the destroyer of Israel. His name is Jesus Christ. But if you don't believe in him, if you'll renounce him, then if you're in good shape physically, if they look you over, oh, okay, good. She or he will be able to work hard. Then they won't kill you. But you might just be beheaded immediately if you're an old man. Or they have an excess of you. This is the reason why the Jews are heads of the organizations we know as zero population growth. They're the ones that want to control the world's population. And when they gain the world power, they're going to make sure that they kill off a certain number. Why do you think they have the Guidestone monuments out in Everton, Georgia? I went there. I saw the monuments. They say we must reduce the population of the world. We must, get rid of most of the people. We can only put up with 500 million people. That's all the world can stand. Now, the Jews believe they'll be redeemed. They're going to be redeemed. How are they going to take over the world? Well, their Messiah will come. He will have power. He will be given power by the serpent. Oh, no. Oh, no, Tex. You can't be telling us that the Jews believe in the serpent. That's what I'm telling you. They actually name him in the Kabbalah. His name is Leviathan. And Leviathan is the serpent found in the book of Job. The book of Job. Leviathan. Now, he has a feminine aspect too. She is known as Behemoth. So, this great serpent, this great beast that rises up out of the sea. Oh, wait just a minute. Isn't that Revelation 13, verse 1? Where John said, I saw a beast rise up out of the sea. Is that not Leviathan? Is that not the serpent, the Messiah of the Jews, who will empower the human Messiah, the king despot, the sovereign Lord of the world, identified in the protocols of Zion? Isn't that the same one that John identifies as the beast who rises up out of the sea? Don't you see, folks? This is what the Jews believe in. They believe in the beast that rises up out of the sea, and he will give power to the beast, and the beast will make war against the saints and shall overcome them, Revelation says. Terrible time that's going to be. But there's a good aspect of it, too. The beast makes war against the saints. Nobody's going to make war on you if you're not an enemy. Nobody's going to try to kill you unless they're afraid of you, unless you're dangerous. They're going to just neglect and avoid you and laugh at you and scorn you. But if you're dangerous, if you threaten them, well, they've got to kill you then. They've got to make war on you. In fact, it says there in Revelation 13 that the whole world believes in the beast and worships the beast except the Christians. And they are involved, they're engaged in a total, all-out war. Why do you think the world is going the way it's going? Why do you think these homosexuals and these same-sex marriage people and these demon spirits in Washington, D.C. that are inspiring our president to do his evil deeds, why do you think they've got Christians targeted and they're going to use the IRS to go after us? Why do you think they're saying, you Christians, we've got to change your Bible. Those are ancient words, and they're no good anymore. Why are they making war on us as Christians? Why do they go to some little Christian baker up in the Midwest and say, we're going to fine you $135,000 because you won't bake a cake for a same-sex marriage? That's ridiculous. They have us as their target. They're going to make war on us. The beast. Leviathan, he comes up out of the sea. That's a symbolic beast. It's the beast who is their Messiah of the Jews. And he's going to definitely make war on you, and you're going to have to fight back. But your weapons are not carnal. Your weapons are mighty, the Bible says. They're mighty. The casting down of imaginations. You will be an overcomer. I can promise you that. He'll make war on you and overcome you for a time, but only for a time. It says in the Bible that the saints that have gone on before us, they stand before the throne and they cry out, oh, how long, O Lord, must we wait? And God says, just a little longer, for there are others who must come, who must die for their faith. Wait just a little longer. Now all the Gentiles, according to the Talmud and the Kabbalah, their property will be seized. Their women, well, that's a different matter. Because the rabbis have something to say about the the Gentile women. They come in for special scalding. The Talmud says that, quote, all Gentile women without exception are Nidat, Shifcha, Goya, and Zoraya. That means menstrual filth, slaves, heathen, and prostitutes. Do you think your sister is that? Do you think your mother is that? Do you think your daughter is menstrual filth, a slave, a heathen, a prostitute? No, you don't. No, you don't. But they do. Every Gentile woman is a shiksa, is a filthy person. And they'll be able to use your Gentile women for sex without restriction. They'll be able to violate them. Now, the best of the Gentiles, of course, will be killed. In fact, that's in the Talmud. Kiddushin, paragraph 66e says, the best of the Gentiles kill. The best of snakes smash its skull. The best of the Gentiles kill. The best of snakes smash its skull. So you are warned, my friends. You're warned about that coming day when the Jews will celebrate their time of light. Their time of the serpent has come. They will be kings of this earth, they think, they imagine. But let me read to you what it says in the book of Revelation in chapter 20. This is the end of things, my friends. This is what happens. It says, and when the 1,000 years are expired, that's the mythical 1,000 years, the legendary 1,000 years of their reign. When 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed this camp of the saints about and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. You're the camp of the saints. Wherever you're at in this great planet, you are in the camp of the saints if you know Jesus Christ. Listen to me. You're in the camp of the saints. And the devil with Gog and Magog, symbolically now, Gog and Magog are all the nations of the earth led by the Jews. They will come up against you and me. They compass the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. We are in heavenly Jerusalem. We are already in the kingdom of God because Jesus is in your heart. But fire comes down from God out of heaven and devours them all. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. And I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away and there was found no place for them. Are you going to live in earth? No. There's no place for earth. Earth is going to be destroyed. And the devil and his people will be cast into the lake of fire. And you, my friends, shall live forever and ever with the Lord. So be it. I'm Tex Mars, my dear friends. We've looked at the meaning of Tikkun Olam. And we've asked the question, will you walk into my parlor? The Christian says, no, no, no. To ask me is in vain. For who goes up your winding stair can ne'er come down again. God bless you until next week.